From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made across Western New York, and think about what we call historic properties. Most of us can think of something, whether it's on our street, in our neighborhood, on the block we live, the place where we work, the block where we work. You can think of something that, boy, just needs some revitalization, needs a revival. And if that property got that spark, the entire community, or a neighborhood, or a street could be revitalized. That's the core of the Five to Revive idea that the Landmark Society of Western New York has just rolled out, the 2014 Five to Revive, and they have not been looking only in the city of Rochester, they've been looking downtown, but also out to Brockport, to Seneca Falls, Orleans County, and we're going to find out what they chose this year and why. Welcome to the studio. First, we've got Caitlin Mivas, a preservation planner with the Landmark Society. Caitlin, thank you for being here.
Glad to be here.
Mary Nicosia is the president of the Landmark Society Board of Trustees. Mary, thank you.
Thank you.
Wayne Goodman's here, the executive director of the Landmark Society of Western New York. Wayne, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Evan.
Well, thank you for being here. And we're going to have a number of guests on the line with us who are out in the community at these various sites. And I want to start with Joe Metella, who is the president of the Greater Brockport Development Corporation. Joe, are you on the line?
Yes, I am, and thank you for the opportunity.
All right, well, thank you. Before we get to your specific project here, let's get kind of an overview. So, Joe, hang there on the line, and let me start with Wayne. What's the history of this program? It's only the second year for Five to Revive, right?
This is the second year.
Okay, and what is the overall mission? When people, I sort of described it as the best way I could think of, but
sure.
How does the Landmark Society describe the mission of Five to Revive?
Well, I think that to really kind of boil it down into practical terms, it's a priority list is really what it is. I think in your introduction you said it well. There's so many properties. You can look in your neighborhood or your district or your community, and there are historic properties all over the place that really need revitalization, that could be catalytic engines for their districts. So the Five to Revive is a list of properties that are historic, that are in need, but that are also situated in a way that would really avail greater economic benefit. So what we're trying to do here is promote five projects that could really benefit not only that particular site, but also the area, neighborhood, district as a whole.
How do you take the steps to find and determine that list of five?
It's a long process.
I imagine.
We have a committee that is chaired by a man named Tom Castelline, who is on our board of trustees, and who's an architect. And we engage a number of people in the community in that committee. And so essentially we look at properties that staff of the Landmark Society are aware of. We take suggestions from the public. And then we start a long process and debate the pros and cons of a lot of different potentials. And we come up with five properties in the end that we'd like to try to focus on and make those priorities.
Priorities for the society. And we'll be walking through this hour, a kind of a game plan for how to actually revive them when it comes to funding streams, community involvement, et cetera.
Yeah, I think that part of putting these on the list is actually to do just that. It's to take a look at each property and work with our local partners to develop a specific strategy for preserving the building that is very unique to that specific property. And as folks can probably understand, each building is different in so many different ways, whether it involves funding or whether it involves end reuse. I mean, you take a building, for example, like the Free Academy in downtown Rochester. Well, the budget for that, the end use, is far, far different than, let's say, a small house that may be used as a local museum. I mean, it's a very different process. So this is a list that we prioritize and make sure that we're coming up with specific strategies for each project.
Caitlin, when the office is debating these projects behind closed doors, is it difficult? I mean, take me through how difficult it can be to make those decisions.
Yeah, I mean, there's, as you can imagine, there's no shortage of buildings or other structures that need help out there in Western New York and in the city. We evaluate all these different criteria. You know, what are the chances that our efforts can make a difference with this property? you know, how much of a long shot is it? And we try and balance the different types of properties that get on the list as well. So we need geographic distribution. You know, we don't want them all to be in the city, for example. We want different property types. You know, we wouldn't want five religious buildings on the list, for example. And we wouldn't want five properties that are going to be really hard saves, but maybe we'll have one or two really hard saves. So it's really, we just sit down and sort of hash it all out amongst the committee.
Do you go out to these properties first?
Some of them, with the staff, we've been to them already because we've been working with local advocates on the ground mm-hmm. already. You know, at a minimum, we have sort of an image of the a digital image of the property, so we can all look at it and have a sense of what it is. But we don't, you know, necessarily go out and sit down and visit every single one as a committee.
Okay, and so you're hearing from Wayne and Caitlin, who are in the office for the Landmark Society, and Mary is the president of the Landmark Society Board of Trustees. So what's the role, what's your role when this process is rolling out, Mary?
Well, there are members of the board that do serve on this committee, mm-hmm. and the board is engaged in the entire process and really supports the whole initiative out there in the public, collectively as a board.
Are you a tiebreaker at all?
No. We really do. Because of the scope of these projects and, again, the amount of properties, we really have left it to the committee to make the decisions, and then the board really takes an active role in supporting it and promoting it, and you know, visiting these sites and talking it up in those communities. With any project that we do out there, the community support is key, the passion of the people around the project, and the more that we can evoke that passion in the community to support the efforts. I mean, that's really key to any project. I mean, it also takes a plan. It also takes money. But when you really get the community and the public behind it and the visibility, and that's where the board provides the support as well as the community members.
That's like, where it's got to be interesting because you're right. The community's got to want it in that neighborhood,
right,
on that street. But are there properties where you say, boy, I don't know why there isn't more initiative about this? You know, you want them to want that property to be revived.
Well, we can't make people care,
yeah,
about their community resources, but what we find in most of these projects, in all these projects, they all come with community support. It's already something we've looked into. We know that the community and the public is behind them already. So we can't force a community to save a resource because we at the Landmark Society think it should be. We really have to look at it collectively and say, can it work? Is it feasible? Is it worth saving? Is it economically, does it make sense to put it on the list? Is it too much of a long shot? I mean, so there's all that criteria, but we usually find that in Rochester and in the surrounding areas especially, you know, people are advocates for their own resources.
All right, before we turn out to Joe and Brockport and start to take a little bit of a radio tour around what the Landmark Society chose for the Five to Revive of 2014, a couple of items of business. First of all, for our listeners, if you want to join the conversation and weigh in on, I don't know, look, you've got great access to the folks here if you want to start nominating for 2015. You can, if you think about what are great buildings and historic sites you'd love to see revived, you can join the conversation, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. And a quick overview from last year. This is the second year now. So the 2013 Five to Revive, what is an example or two that it included, and how is it going, Wayne?
Sure. Well, last year's list included the Olmsted Pedestrian Bridges in Genesee Valley Park in Rochester, the Eastman Dental Dispensary on Main Street in Rochester, Pulaski Library, which is also in Rochester, and then two properties outside of the city is the Sampson Theater, which is in Pinyan, and Holly High School in the Village of Holly. A quick update on those. Mm-hmm. The Olmsted Pedestrian Bridges, we feel like we've been able to bring a variety of partners together from the State Department of Transportation, local, county officials, and we've made a lot of headway there. The Eastman Dental Dispensary, you've probably seen in the news recently. It's a major project. This list was influential in leveraging some matching funds, and we're very hopeful that that project is moving forward for residential use. And Pulaski Library, we're still working on. Sampson Theater has a local organization that is pushing for it, strong advocates. And Holly High School, we're working with a local developer there to look into the possibility of senior housing.
If a project lands on Five to Revive, is there a 1, 3, 5, 10-year plan? Is every project different?
every project is different.
Yeah.
And if you look at last year's list, for example, you know, the Olmsted Bridges, for instance, that's a very long-term project. We need to come up with a maintenance plan. There has to be a funding plan. That's very, very long-term. Some other projects are probably, I think, more urgent. Pulaski Library, for instance, it's in a tough neighborhood. It's a neighborhood, though, that needs investment. And so the timing, I think, is much more critical in that particular example.
And Caitlin, is that sort of what you're describing, that you talk about the bridges versus the library, very different in terms of harder save, longer term versus more urgent?
Right. I mean, with the bridges, for example, you're dealing with a resource that goes over a waterway that's owned by a state agency, and trying to get the funding and get all the different players together. You know, the land around it's owned by the city, operated by the county, so there's lots of different players, and, you know, just getting folks to sit at the table, you know, it was a good step in the right mm-hmm. direction. So that is, like Wayne said, going to be a really long-term one.
Is there an annual budget for investing money in these projects?
From our end, we have marketing budget, we have technical assistance budget. It's all wrapped up into our annual budget that's approved by the Board of Trustees. You know, specifically though, of course, each one of these projects is going to carry, you know, vastly different budgets. But yeah, we do have some that we sort of wrap into our overall annual budget.
And how does the Landmark Society essentially get funded on an annual basis?
Our funding is almost entirely through contributions. It's membership and donations and contributions. We're a 501c3 nonprofit. We were founded in 1937, and we serve the city of Rochester and surrounding regions, a 9-county region.
All right, we're going to take a tour of the 2014 one, but first, Joe from Rochester has his own thoughts about preservation. Go ahead, Joe.
Hi, how are you doing this afternoon?
Do I have a different Joe? Do I have a couple Joes on the line? I've got Joe Matella from Brockport. We're going to get to you in a second. This is Joe from Rochester. We've got two Joes on the line. Hi, Joe from Rochester. Go ahead.
Hi. There's a cobblestone building around the corner from me. It's located on Culver Road. And my understanding was it may be one of the few or possibly the only cobblestone buildings left in our city. And I was wondering if you know anything about it.
Joe from Rochester, thanks for the call. Caitlin, you're nodding immediately. Go ahead.
Well, I also have sort of a blank look on my face. We are aware of the property, and we have been sort of keeping our eye on it, and it's been sort of on our to-do list to look into that property. So we're definitely aware of it, and we did even discuss it when we were looking at this year's Five to Revive.
Yeah, I can look at my own. If I flip back into my own notes, Joe, that specific project was sort of on the final possibilities for our Five to Revive. So yeah, we're very well aware of the property, and would like to see something, you know, move in the right direction.
And Marty on Twitter wants to know, how do you nominate a property? How do we nominate?
Well, we don't have a formal nomination process, but you know, folks can get in touch with us, Facebook, Twitter, get our email off of our website, landmarksociety.org, and shoot us a note, give us a call if you've got a property in mind in the region that needs some help. We'll take a look at it.
All right, Five to Revive 2014. We're going to start in Brockport, and a brief description before we bring Joe in from our people in the room here. Go ahead, Caitlin, how was this project chosen, and give me a kind of an outline.
Yes, yeah, so the property in Brockport is a former warehouse along the Erie Canal. It's a sandstone building, former industrial building, and is really important to the industrial history of the Erie Canal in general, and Brockport specifically, and one of really very few industrial resources that remain along the canal. And it's been vacant for many years in Brockport, and the Greater Brockport Development Corporation acquired the property and has done some stabilization work and some remediation work, and they've been trying to market the property to a developer. And so that's where we stand today, trying to get someone to get a hold of that building and put some money into it.
Joe Matella, who's the president of the Greater Brockport Development Corporation, what does it mean for your organization to have this project land on the Five to Revive?
Well, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this afternoon, and I'll tell you, it is just fabulous that we were selected. What it means to us is that it highlights the importance of the building and also its historic importance, not only to the community, but for along the Erie Canal. And it also will encourage revitalization of all the properties on Clinton Street and in downtown Brockport. So it is an anchor property for future development of our community. So we are very thrilled to have received this distinction.
Joe, is this a big lift kind of a project? What's it going to take to make this actually happen?
Well, at the present time, we're waiting for an approval for a Main Street technical grant of $20,000, which will give us, once we finish all the plans, that'll give us a shovel-ready project. And then after that, we will be shopping around for a developer. And what this will do will give us, again, a shovel-ready property. And hopefully we're going to have a lot of developers that are going to be very anxious to come and put some money into this project and make it happen.
And Joe, again, forgive me, if you've got a developer who's going to come in for this project, what is there an optimal goal for what that building ends up not only looking like, but housing, or kind of walk me through that process?
Well, at the present time, we're hoping that it will end up as a mixed-use facility with some commercial and some residential use. And but we intend on having the community give us input and feedback on what they would like to see there. So, you know, we will be open to many suggestions as to what they would like. But hopefully the developer, after we've got our plans all in order, will be able to tell us what the best use will be for the building in order to make it a real standout on Clinton Street and give us the economic boost that we really need desperately.
Talking to Joe Metella, the president of the Greater Brockport Development Corporation. Joe, on this program before and with some of these guests before, we've talked about the question of preservation when it comes to if you're going to take a building with some historic quality and repurpose it. Is there an importance in preserving either some of the, for lack of a better word, old bones, or at least honoring some of the historical heritage? How much is that in your mind when this process starts to move forward?
That is paramount in our mind, is preserving its historical nature. And we really intend on making that, one of the things that we really want to see happen to preserve this important structure along the Erie Canal. We need to do it the right way. And we're going to make sure that we see that it is preserved and that the heritage is preserved for the community and for those who travel the Erie Canal. So that is going to be number one importance on our list.
And Joe, what are you hearing from other people in that area? You know, Caitlin and Mary and Wayne have talked about the importance of the community rallying behind a Five to Revive, that the community is going to want it. And clearly you do. But is there a sense that this has turned on a bit of an engine of enthusiasm? Are people talking about this? Is there a sense that this is a development opportunity, not just on this site, but for others?
Oh, people are very excited. And, they look to the Landmark Society to bring to the forefront the need for historical preservation. And I think that when people look at the preservation that's been taking place in Western Monroe County, the Landmark Society has been just fabulous in selecting these properties so that they can be preserved in the right way. The whole community is thrilled because, they don't make these buildings anymore. So we really need to make sure that they are preserved for generations to come. So, yeah, everybody is just excited, very thrilled.
And, Joe, if our audience missed it, tell us again where exactly the building is that we're talking about.
The building is on number 60 Clinton Street. And that is runs parallel to the Erie Canal. It's just off Main Street, and it's in the heart of our business district. And, if you have a chance and you feel like taking a drive out to Brockport, I'll be more than happy to show anyone the building.
And before I let you go, Joe, and I'll ask you this question, and then I'll turn it to our studio here. Sometimes older buildings unfortunately fall into disrepair and there are questions on what to do with them. And we've talked about the challenge of either repurposing an existing building or knocking down and starting new. And tell me your thoughts on that difference in approach.
Well, I personally have been working on this project since 2001, and the option of knocking it down and starting new never entered my mind. And I'm sure many people in the community would not want to see that happen. Preservation is the number one thing that we're trying to do here. Again, we want to do it once, and we want to do it the right way. So we're all for the preserving what we have here. It's a wonderful structure, and it's going to be fabulous when we get it done. We're so excited and thankful or the Landmark Society for giving us this opportunity.
Joe, thanks for taking the time to join the program today. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Evan.
That's Joe Metello, the president of the Greater Brockport Development Corporation, talking about the building at 60 Clinton Street, the Erie Canal Warehouse that is on the five to revive. Caitlin, is there a point of no return for buildings when it comes to possibly rehabbing, revitalizing, repurposing?
Sure. There's always going to be a point. Not every building can or should be saved. What it really comes down to is economics. Can it be economically rehabbed and converted to a new use? And I mean, I guess what I would say is buildings are rarely so far gone that they can't physically be rehabbed. Again, it comes down to the economics. Is there a market for rehab? What's the end use? Is there a developer that can make the investment to make that happen?
And it probably surprises some people. And Mary, let me ask you again, we're talking to a number of folks from the Landmark Society. Mary Nixia is the president of the Landmark Society Board of Trustees. It probably surprises some people to hear that buildings that they think are too far gone can be saved.
Sure. I mean, and the Eastman Dental Dispensary is one example of that. I mean, there have been many people that have written that building off a long time ago as something that could never, ever come back. And if you remember getting around Halloween time, I think they had it as the Haunted Dental Dispensary, and that was its only use for the past couple of years, which drove us crazy because we knew there was that building had much more potential than that. So people do, either by misinformation, write things off in their minds and saying, you know, gee, that, you know, I heard that building is just done. There's nothing that ever could be done there. And again, the dental dispensary, a lot of people had written that off as that could never, ever, ever happen. And that revitalization is going to be a key component on Main Street and a very important building, both to the city of Rochester and George Eastman's legacy. So,
yeah, remind Mary, our listeners, where that building is.
That building is on Main Street.
It's actually over, isn't it? It's on this. It's on East Main.
East Main Street.
It's close to the Armory.
Close to the Armory. Yeah. So, just another great example of, again, when it's only used as a haunted house, that says something about what the community expects of it. But again, many of us who don't work in your line of work may be surprised to hear what's possible. So in a moment, we're going to take our tour out to the town of Clarendon. So let's do this. Let's take a very short break, come right back here, and continue the tour of the Five to Revive properties of 2014. The Landmark Society of Western New York is here, and we're talking about saving and expanding and sort of not just revitalizing single properties, but entire neighborhoods or streets or communities. More to come on member-supported public radio. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, we look at police body cameras. Who's using them? How much do they cost? Who benefits the most, the citizenry or police? Police departments across the country are considering these cameras and will explore what happens when police wear them. That's all coming up Tuesday, and you can join the discussion on Connections.
Months after a police officer shot and killed an unarmed teenager in Ferguson, Missouri, some residents plan to move out. Others resolve to foster change.
We have a responsibility to stay, understanding that a lot of those changes are heart changes and are going to take a lot of work and a long time.
Saving the community of Ferguson, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's this afternoon at 4 o'clock on your public radio station.
Back to the discussion. We're talking with the Landmark Society of Western New York, talking about their Five to Revive. And if you're just joining us, rather hot off the proverbial or cliched presses, the Landmark Society's Five to Revive of 2014. We're looking around Western New York and the sites that they chose to invest in or reinvest in or rehab. And Wayne Goodman's here, is the executive director. Real briefly again, for people just joining the conversation, the mission of the five to revive is what?
To prioritize historic resources that are in need for community revitalization.
Simple as that. And they spend the year certainly looking at kind of nominations, for lack of a better term, or discussions about projects. They settle on five, and then the mission becomes the revitalization on that site and in that area. Let's turn our attention to the town of Clarendon. And what's in Clarendon?
Well, one thing that would be the precursor to the selection for this year in Clarendon, which is the Hillside Cemetery and Chapel in Clarendon. We worked with local advocates in Clarendon on a project that I think really encompasses much of what you were talking about, Evan, about does it make sense? And can you save everything? Which, of course, you can't. And we worked with advocates in Clarendon on a stone store. And the building was up for demolition. People thought that the building was, you know, too far gone, to sort of borrow that phrase. Mm-hmm. And we were able to come in with a study that showed that it was economically viable. And I think as we speak, it's going through a revitalization right in the heart of the little small hamlet in Clarendon. So I think sort of building on that momentum, we really felt like that the Hillside Chapel and Cemetery had that local connection. And it adds, I think, one more element to Clarendon's overall livability. And, you know, people are looking for unique communities now. I mean, we live in a global community, and people can live anywhere that has a connection. And I think that people are looking for those unique communities that retain their authenticity. And I really feel like the Hillside Chapel and Cemetery does that. It really seeks to maintain that unique quality.
I think that's very well said, because I think we've spent decades with modernization putting grids everywhere. And there's nothing. I mean, I get why, especially when the automobile was the mode of the future. But I think now the question is character and preservation. And so let's bring in Aaron Anheuer. And Aaron is a resident in the town of Clarendon who has advocated for the Hillside Cemetery and Chapel. Aaron, how are you?
Good. How are you today?
Good. Thanks for taking the time. Tell us the value for people who live there. What is the value of this project, and what do you see coming if this is successful?
Well, Hillside Cemetery is in a very visible location in Clarendon. It's right at the northern end of the town, and it sits at the southern edge of the village of Holly. So a lot of traffic goes by there. There's actually a road that intersects the cemetery, so if you're in this part of the area, you're not going to be able to miss Hillside Cemetery. And the chapel in particular sits right at the point of a Y intersection. So it's highly visible both to the village of Holly and also to the rest of the town of Clarendon. The cemetery is a very beautiful Victorian cemetery, quite interesting in its design, because one half is the old rural cemetery movement style with terraces and beautiful stones. And part is more 20th century lawn-style cemetery with more modern stones. But it's very nicely landscaped, as I said, great location, and this chapel is really the shining jewel in it.
Is there a price tag for this?
If we were to do everything we'd like to do to this chapel alone, would be about $250,000, and that's a very big thing for a small town like Clarendon to handle. And that doesn't even start to address landscape issues in the cemetery where terraces need repair, et cetera.
And so, Aaron, now that this project is on the Five to Revive list, what changes in terms of urgency, planning, preparation to try to get this done?
Well, I think the biggest thing is it will raise awareness in the community. We have a tendency as people, I think, to see something every day, and after a while, it's just part of the landscape, and we don't think about it. So this is a great opportunity to get local people to realize, you know, that is a beautiful building, and it would be a real shame to lose it. Something would be lost in our community beyond just a pile of, you know, bricks and mortar. It's something that's part of the culture, it's part of the environment, and it's also a great reminder of our history. A lot of the people who were very important in the development of this area are buried in that cemetery. The cemetery is used by the local school system as an outdoor classroom occasionally to teach the kids about local history. The other thing I think is going to be very important is having someone like the Landmark Society say this building is worth saving, this cemetery is worth preserving, really validates the value of the property. It's sometimes easy for people to say, well, it's old, something new might be better, but this kind of says people who really know what they're talking about are concerned about this and think it's a good project.
Absolutely.
That's a very important message.
And let me bring in Caitlin and Mary on that point. I want to ask, Caitlin Mivas is a preservation planner with the Landmark Society, and Caitlin, to Aaron's point there, I think it's one thing to say just about everyone agrees that preserving this building and this piece of character is very important. It's another to say, the price tag is feasible. And that's a big number that she put on there, $250,000 in a small town. How do you decide, as the Landmark Society, to put it on the Five to Revive and make sure that that's in line with what is viable?
Well, with as we discussed before, in this particular case, the Hillside Cemetery, we knew had strong local support. We've worked with Aaron and the advocates in Clarendon before on the Clarendon Stone Store, so we knew that it had that really important piece. And we knew that, that this was also an important historic landscape. So it's a good example of the different types of resources that we work with. You know, it's not necessarily just buildings. It's bridges and landscapes and other types of structures. And yeah, that is a hefty price tag for a small town like Clarendon to take on. So what we can do with this Five to Revive listing is help ferret out some funding, maybe help develop some strategies, help set up a plan to get some of that maintenance in place over time.
Mary, well, how do you answer that question, especially being on the board? Is this the right kind of decision?
It is, and I think just to clarify, you know, as a small not-for-profit, which is what the Landmark Society is, what we do is facilitate funding. We don't come to the table with a big check to say we can get this done, which sometimes people think we can, you know, save a house solely on our own. That's not what we do. What we do is facilitate and coordinate some skin in the game from the public, which is pretty much key to a lot of these projects, as well as perhaps some grants or sourcing some other funding. And usually when these projects are successful, it's a combination of public and private support and some government support. So it takes a lot of different facets to bring that all to the table, and that's what we do as the Landmark Society. We don't write the check. I wish we could, but we can't. So we are kind of the organizers of this. So
before I get back to the phones, because we have some people want to weigh in as well here, Aaron, let me ask you, and again, we're talking to Aaron Anheuer, who's a resident in the town of Clarendon. Part of the Five to Revive criteria is not just one spot, one site, but also making sure that the impact on the community or sort of the greater surrounding area could be valuable there. What do you see as the value outside of the chapel there in Clarendon?
Well, I think it helps emphasize that I think there's a renewed interest in the history of the area. We saw that with the Clarendon Stone Store. It was planned on being demolished. And a lot of people in the community came forward and said, no, that's part of our community, that's part of our history, it's important to us. And it's something we want in our landscape. So I think the cemetery and the chapel serve that same purpose. They remind people that we aren't just some cookie-cutter community. We are a unique area, we have our own history. And what we have built and what our forefathers have built in the area are important to us.
All right, Aaron, stay there. Back to the phones. This is Keith in Brighton. Go ahead, Keith.
I have an interesting show. I got a quick question. Do we refurbish? Let's say you have a building that has to be refurbished, but it might be on the Landmark Society's list of buildings to keep. At what cost do you say that's too expensive? And just for an illustration, let's say you got a building that's 60 years old, and it has 60-year-old mechanicals and electronics and electrical, but you want to bring it up to today's standards, which would have to qualify for ADA. You have to have internet, different size bathrooms, et cetera, et cetera, low flush toilets, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Do you just do it at all costs, or do you say, okay, it would be nice to save it, but for what we're spending, it's not worth it, because you could tear it down, rebuild it from scratch, modern, with modern amenities, a modern type purpose, and save the taxpayers money.
It is Monday. Thank you, Keith. Very good questions. Thanks for the call, Keith. Let me start with Wayne. Go ahead. How do you answer that?
Well, I think that it goes back to what we were saying earlier, that each property is just so different, and you know, I think that so many of these projects. Not just the Five to Revive, but I think so many of the projects that are buildings or resources that are historic in nature, to be perfectly honest, the market sort of answers that question. You know, the timing, the economy, the location of a building, the market, the local interest, the condition, the historical significance, all of those come into play when communities and developers and business owners are considering whether or not it's feasible. I think with the example that was given, I think really that's what we do. You know, that's what we do. We go out and try and facilitate to get those types of questions answered. So if you have to modernize this building, what's it going to cost? And where's the money coming from? And absolutely, there are, you know, admittedly, there are instances all over Western New York and in the country where it just simply doesn't work. When you have a project that's going to require $5 million of investment, and once you complete the project, it's worth $500,000, that's a really tough lift. It doesn't matter if it's a great, amazing, beautiful historic structure or not. It's a tough lift. On the other hand, we see projects all over Western New York, particularly some that are taking place in downtown Rochester now, that are old buildings that can be rehabbed that are very profitable. And so I think every single project is so incredibly different that it's tough to make a blanket statement. But I think that the issues that were brought up by the caller are exactly the issues that we have to look at each time.
Before I let you go, Aaron, real briefly here now, do you have a timetable out in Clarendon for seeing something happen? Is there an urgency that something has to happen by a year, 3 years, 5 years, or is this just going to be a process?
Well, it's going to be a process. The only urgency I would see right now is making sure that that building is weather tight. The chapel I'm speaking about, that needs to be done. There's some stuff that needs to be done probably before this winter. But I think this is a project that's going to take years. If funding is going to be a problem, we are applying for grants. We're asking for donations from people in the community. So it'll take us a while to raise the money, but I think it's a project we might accomplish in 5 years, might take 10 years. I hope it doesn't take that long, but we'll need some immediate action.
Aaron, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
That's Aaron Anheuer, a resident of the town of Clarendon and an advocate for the Hillside Cemetery and Chapel, which is on the 2014 Five to Revive list from the Landmark Society of Western New York. Before we head out to Seneca Falls, we'll make that the fifth and final. Let's briefly hit two of the others who are not going to be represented by actual people on the program today. So, Wayne, a couple of the others.
Sure. The Auditorium Theater in Rochester, that was placed on the list to be honest with you, just to be proactive. We know that the Auditorium Theater, the Rochester Broadway Theater League, is raising funds for that specific building for some maintenance, and I think they're also looking to do some ADA, Americans with Disability Act, alterations there, so we wanted to be helpful. So Auditorium Theater is one, and then also in Rochester, we placed the designated buildings of historic value, which is a list that the city of Rochester has, and every building on that list has to get a zoning variance before they get demolished. And so this list in particular was placed on our Five to Revive because we really feel like, and I think that I can speak for many people in the community, that the list is out of date. There's some errors in the list. It needs to be updated. And so I think as a community, before we begin debating whether or not buildings should be demolished, you should probably have an accurate set of facts on which to debate. Mm-hmm. And so that's our aim with that particular listing.
And Mary, when it comes to the Auditorium Theater, for example, this community has debated for a long time whether there needs to be a brand new performing arts center. The current mayor has lobbied for $100 million, hasn't gotten it, from the state for a new performing arts center. We see a private developer out in the Medley Center. And no matter what you think of Scott Conjul's history, there are some people still hopeful that that will happen. So do you keep an eye on those developments when you're deciding whether or not to put the Auditorium Theater on the Five to Revive list?
We do somewhat. I mean, our interest is in the building, not necessarily in the use of it.
Okay.
So whether we're interested in it, you know, to make sure it always stays the Rochester Broadway Theater League's headquarters, it's not necessarily our mission, so to speak. I mean, our interest is in saving the building overall.
So even if there's a new performing arts center, that building still has important historic value. And regardless if RBTL's in there, you think it will find use if it is preserved?
Correct. And so we would support.
It's not going to be an empty theater,
right?
You're assuming it's going to find use,
right? We've talked to the Rochester Broadway Theater League people about the potential of a new theater and what would happen to this building, you know, from their perspective, and they feel they could sustain both locations. But again, our mission is to be helpful with preservation of the building, and we think it would be successful in its use as a theater.
All right, so let's turn our attention out to Seneca Falls. And Wayne, just a brief intro on what we're going to talk about there.
Sure. The listing is the former Trinity Episcopal Church, located on Bayard Street in Seneca Falls. And this particular resource in Seneca Falls is one of the most historic sites, really, in Seneca Falls. And it has ties to the abolitionist movement, ties to the women's history movement. The building has been vacant for a number of years. And there was a line item state funding from Senator Nozzolio several years ago that really made possible the purchase and acquisition of the building. It's owned by a local nonprofit, and we really feel like there's a lot of local interest there, a lot of local support. And again, I hate to go back to that term, but a catalytic effect. Obviously, Seneca Falls is known for its history. History in Seneca Falls is a huge part of their economy. And so this ties right into sort of the intersection of heritage and economy.
Let me bring in Allison Stokes to the conversation. She's the advocate in this project for the former Trinity Episcopal Church. She's on the line with us now. Allison, thanks for taking the time for us.
Hi, Evan. Thanks. It's great to be with you.
Well, and you heard Wayne talking about the value of that property out there, but you're there. You're on the ground in Seneca Falls. Tell us what it means to that community.
Absolutely. And I'm one of many advocates for the historic Trinity Church. The present Trinity Church, I want to just make sure that people are clear, mm-hmm. an enormous stone building, beautiful building that was built after the historic church, which is a wooden structure. And so the present Trinity Church is recognizable as an icon from the I Love New York posters. People will know that Trinity Church, but this is the predecessor. And we are very, very grateful to the Landmark Society for choosing this as a Five to Revive project, because it really helps save the building from being demolished, which was what appeared to be in the works. The Seneca Falls Town Council would like to build a new town hall, and one of the proposed sites was the site of the Trinity Historic Church, and that was to come down if this was chosen as a site. And that's basically when this group of advocates came together. It's an ad hoc group. We haven't named ourselves yet, but I think we're thinking of the Trinity Church as being the first church, historic building that we want to concentrate our efforts on to save it. It's the place where Elizabeth Cady Stanton walked to church with her kids. They didn't belong. But Amelia Bloomer was baptized there. Five of the signers of the Declaration of Sentiments worshiped there. And it was an African-American members as well, so an interracial congregation. It's just a stunning history. And then in the end of the 19th century, it was bought by the company that became the Westcott Rule Company, and it was a factory. So it has a double historic value as not only the church, but it's a 19th century factory building. So we worried that it was going to be torn down in order to put the new town hall site there, but the town councilmen have chosen another site out in the neighborhood. I think some of us are very disappointed that this Trinity Historic Church wasn't carefully looked at in terms of reuse or adaptive reuse, repurposing, to be maybe the site of the town hall. I mean, it would need rehab, of course, and probably added space where there's plenty of room for building a added structure to it to be the town hall, but never got any information about what that would cost. It's been very interesting to me to hear you all talk about the pros and cons of the expense in readapting a building, but we have no idea. So having the Landmark Society as part partners in this, calling attention to the value of it. Senator Nozzolio did that more than a decade ago when he used public funds, $150,000, to purchase this building so that it would be continue its importance into the 21st century, as he said then. So it's just wonderful to have the visibility and support of the Landmark Society. Mm-hmm. Because to me, Evan, by adapting this building for reuse, it can become a model of others rather than constantly seeking to build anew.
And Allison, real briefly, there is no sort of final price tag that we can associate with this project yet, is that right?
No, there isn't. We have no idea. In fact, the first step is really to have architects, preservation architects, do a study of exactly what's needed to preserve this building. We have no idea.
Yeah.
It was so recently we were working against the demolition. That was the focus.
Sure, sure. And let me, Wayne, real briefly mm-hmm. here, because we're running out of time, just a few minutes left here. You hear Allison talking about the fact that, and this is not to malign a town council, but their only consideration for that site was knock it down and build new. Apparently there was not much consideration, if any, on rehab existing.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was even, you know, brought up at the town level at that point. I think that, you know, adding on to what Allison was speaking about, I think that with this particular structure, maybe more so than any other, maybe Brockport, I think it's important to at least have some type of a concept first as to what can it be used for.
Yeah.
Because then it really depends, because depending on the use is really going to drive what the price tag is going to be.
Allison, just a couple minutes left here. Since
sure.
since the announcement that this project is on the Five to Revive, is there a spark now? I mean, do you feel that there is going to be more community urgency, especially with the fact that you haven't felt all that much, I would say, help or assistance from government so far?
That's right. I think that it's very exciting. The front page of the Finger Lakes Times a week ago today had the headline, "One to Save in Seneca Falls," and that really was extremely encouraging and helpful, because we know that the new town hall is going to cost $3.1 million. And so that's what a new building would cost. It'd be really interesting to know what a readaptive historic building would be cost. And there are many historic buildings now that the town has as surplus, even as they're building new. So I think the bigger issue here is, and why I appreciate the Landmark Society, it's preservation is revitalization. I mean, it's a concept that people need to really understand. And that's what you all have been talking about, the uniqueness and the irreplaceable historic buildings that people value and want to keep.
Allison, thanks for taking the time to join the program
sure.
today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Evan. Thank you.
Allison Stokes calling from Seneca Falls, and maybe to our panel here, it's just a matter of getting political leaders to at least think about the options. I mean, it's possible that they would have looked at this and said, still not a good financial viable option, but apparently that even looking into it doesn't happen very often, or more as often as it should.
Well, I think that, you know, in Clarendon, you know, with the example of the stone store, you know, when that came up and the town was planning on demolishing it, you really can't kind of point the finger of blame there. I mean, that's typically what happens. Yeah, buildings are depressed, they need to come down. But sometimes that's not the best option.
Yeah, and I appreciate, I think our listeners appreciate the fact that you, Caitlin and Mary and Wayne and people like Larry Francer, who couldn't be with us today, that you get us thinking about the options at least. I mean, maybe it's not a viable save, and maybe
right.
it is, but too
That's
often
right.
we shouldn't just assume can't do it. So thanks for taking the time. The Five to Revive list and more, where can they find it online?
LandmarkSociety.org.
LandmarkSociety.org. Caitlin Mivas, Mary Nicosia, Wayne Goodman, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you.
Thank you,
thank
Evan.
You.
And we appreciate your listenership as well. To our listeners, I'm Evan Dawson. It's member-supported public radio. If you like what you hear on this program and more, think about becoming a member this week. We can finish this pledge drive a little early with your help. I appreciate your time as well. Mike Black behind the glass, and I'll see you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.